Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking about why you need to fix your car, the solution to overthinking, and asking the question, what's a better gift, stocks or flowers?
Are you a flowers kind of guy or a stocks kind of guy, Joel?
I'll take either.
I'm actually easy to please.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later on. But this is our Friday flight. We're going to talk about the different stories that we came across this week and how it pertains to your money, how it pertains to our personal finances. Joel, first of all, though, let's talk about gift cards.
Yeah. So we're talking about gifting, right? Stocks or flowers. The worst kind of gift is one of those prepaid gift cards, Matt, that you might give someone that comes with a fee attached to it. So school just finished up. My wife, she was the room mom for my daughter's kindergarten class. And of course, you want to get the teachers a really nice gift at the end of the year. They've done a good job, especially this past year.
Want to give them an extra hug, but we can't. It's not allowed.
This gift card will have to suffice.
Yeah.
But so my wife was like, all right, but here's the deal. Like the other room parents alongside me decided that we got to get these prepaid gift cards. And I was like, oh, it made me want to like fall on a sword. You know, And I'll explain why. Because, I actually went to the store and bought these cards.
Yeah, you did this in person.
Yep, I went and purchased it.
Like a old school
dad. Which made it even harder because I had to physically grab them off the shelf and go to the cashier and buy them and watch the numbers ring up. The problem with these gift cards is that they come with an activation fee. So, like, if I just hand you, Matt, $100 in cash,
I get to spend $100 in cash.
There's no activation fee necessary.
Exactly.
But if you buy one of those prepaid gift cards, $5.95 comes off automatically, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I can't believe you actually went through with it. Just like, you know, okay, $6, it's not that big of a deal. Parents have already chipped in the money. But we're principle-driven people here, right? And even just the thought of having to pay money to access money seems incredibly dumb.
Yeah, no, it's kind of against everything I know and love and believe, but in this life. And so they sent the wrong person to do the job because I like sweated over it and I like kept thinking, is there a way around this?
It's like we're sitting there like walking in circles trying to figure out a way to like around this problem.
But the one good thing for me at least was using my Amex Blue Cash Preferred because 6% back on that purchase. But yeah, I hate to do that.
Was it worth the stress?
Probably not. No, I'm probably going to die. It took a year off my life is my guess.
It wasn't worth it.
But yeah, so just word to the wise out there. If you're ever trying to give somebody a gift, one of those prepaid gift cards is just not the way to go because most of them do come with one of those activation fees, which completely eats into the value proposition of giving somebody money.
Yeah, and I know it kind of goes against maybe the typical norms of parents of children at school to say, hey, we're going to actually give cash. But I would have 100% been okay saying, guess what? We're not going to do the gift card. We're actually going to hand over a nice card, maybe a handwritten note with some kids' drawings in it or something like that.
With green stuff inside.
With literal cash. I mean, it's not something that we should be afraid of. This seems like a more that I would be willing to kind of push back on a little bit.
Yeah, let's end that stigma around cash because there's just no reason that cash should be considered to be a classless gift, right?
Like it's sure.
I think cash is incredibly classy.
Okay, so here's the weird part too is like say I don't know what the dollar amount was, but like if it came out to a dollar amount that wasn't an even number, I would even be willing to pitch in a few extra bucks to get it to a solid number, right? Like sure, you don't want to hand over gift cash that's got like a bunch of 20s, some 10s, a 5, and like 4 ones, right? Like, I'll go ahead and pitch in $16 in order to get it up to...
Yeah,
obviously no change. I would be willing to fork out a little bit more just to give it, you know, a nice crisp bill or a few couple crisp bills, whatever it takes. But I'm with you, man. I would have been hard-pressed to actually go through with that and spend that money, money that's going to some of these large banks instead of to the actual teacher.
So I did it, but
it's a predicament that we're
never in. Again, I hope. Never again. But all right, Matt, let's move on to the sampling of stories we found this week. We call it our Friday flight, and we got a few stories to get to, Matt. And later on in the show, we're actually going to have a guest on the second half of the show, John Acuff, who just wrote a new book about overthinking and how to stop it, which is just a common problem that many of us face. And yeah, looking forward to chatting with him in just a few. But before we get to that, let's talk about those stories. The first one has to do with car insurance. And as a lot of folks are packing up their cars, they're hitting the road this summer, Matt, let's talk about cars, because a lot of people are going to be avoiding airplanes getting in their cars.
Yep.
And specifically car insurance, because many folks saw their premiums go down over the past year. A lot of car insurance companies offered even a rebate to their customers last spring as people weren't driving much and profits were rolling in. You know, we talked about that on the show, and we talked about how to talk to your car insurance company about getting that rebate. But people are back in their cars and they're driving like it's 2019. And that means that inflation is actually starting to hit the auto and home insurance rates too. I know we're all tired of hearing the word inflation and hearing about every single product that we buy becoming more expensive, but yes, it is happening with your insurance too. So if you get a notice from your insurance company that your premiums are going up, Matt and I would say it's time to shop around in order to save money. You can't really like fight the man in this case. Really, the only way to combat rising rates is to, yeah, shop the marketplace.
Yeah, we're pretty much always going to be fans of shopping those rates on an annual or even, you know, an every other year basis. But each insurer is going to actually take a different tact in a market where rates are on the rise. And so, yeah, hopefully this is a prompt for you to make that boring phone call to an independent insurance agent where you live. And Policy Genius is another great place where they can shop on your behalf. I actually just shopped my insurance, and it turns out that my current rate is actually pretty good. Maybe you're in a similar boat. And so something else that we would recommend for folks to do as well is to, if you've got really low deductibles, consider raising those in particular if you have a solid emergency fund set up. If you've got one of those $100 deductibles, you could be saving a ton of money every single month by raising that up to, say, $500 or $1,000. You don't want to make it too easy to take advantage of that insurance, and at the same time, you'll be able to save money, yeah, every single month.
The goal of most types of insurance is to not use it, right?
Unlike our health insurance, which we have a very different approach right. towards how we use, right?
Life insurance you definitely don't want to use, right? You want to stay alive
as long
as you can.
Let's use that on the reg. Yeah, can't.
And Matt, since we're talking about cars, Consumer Reports had an excellent article the other day about why repairing your car makes even more sense right now. Everyone knows at this point that new and used cars have gone up quite a bit in price too. Talking about inflation, right? 40% of shoppers aren't even able to find the car they want right now. And Bloomberg just reported that prices are going to continue to rise in the coming months for a number of factors. And that's because of just like, yeah, a lot of curveballs that COVID has thrown at the industry, including plant shutdowns, a massive shortage of microchips. We've been reading a lot about that. And really all of this means that you're better off sticking with your current vehicle as long as you possibly can. It can be hard emotionally, I would say, at times to pour money into like an older car that you feel is having frequent issues. You're like, man, I just fixed something 3 months ago. I really don't want to have to put more money into this puppy, but it still makes financial sense much of the time. And in particular, right now, because replacing that car has just gotten a whole lot more expensive.
Yeah, so we would recommend for folks to do a cost-benefit analysis. So let's say that a repair that you're going to have to make on your vehicle is going to cost you $1,000. Well, it's important for you to ask the question, like, how many more months, you know, do I think that this is going to buy me, you know, with this car? So if you think about it this way, that repair, it's still going to be less than just 2 months of a payment on the average new car, which is actually $563.
Wow.
And so, yeah, even though $1,000, it is a big chunk of change, it's far less than the cost of hitching yourself to, you know, year after year of car payments. If fixing your car is going to lead to you being able to drive it for a good while longer, then we think you should make the repair. And we also really want folks to avoid those new cars just because of that depreciation hit that you take just from driving the car off the lot. On average, you're looking at a 20% decline in value on that vehicle. And so with that in mind, keep driving that old car.
Yeah, for real. I've heard a lot of people, Matt, say, man, my car's over 100,000 miles on it now, and I'm going to have to drop $800 into it. Isn't it time for me to get a new car? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
The answer is no. Unless, like, you can totally afford it and you really, really want a new car.
And that's your craft beer equivalent that happens to cost thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, for most people, repair that car, keep it running strong so that you can avoid buying a car at literally the worst time to buy a car in, as far as I can remember.
How many
right?
miles do y'all have on Homer, by the way, your van?
146,000, baby.
146? Okay. We rolled over 115 recently, so we're catching up.
I don't know if either of us are ever going to put, you know, get to 200 based on the way we drive. It's going to be like 10 years.
Yeah, it'll be a while.
Well, all right, Matt, let's keep moving. Let's talk about student loans for just a second. it's summertime. Most people don't want to be thinking about school. I know my kids don't right now.
Yeah.
They're like, we're done with that for now. But yeah, ask any teacher or student. They'll always tell you that summer never feels long enough, right? It's like, oh, we got to go back once August rolls around, or I guess September maybe, depending on where you live. Well, I know a lot of people are going to be feeling that way come this fall because student loan payments are set to resume on October 1st. And I know that like we're giving kind of an extended heads up here. That's still more than 3.5 months away. But I think it's just important for us to mention it here because we haven't talked about that in a while. And it's just important for people to start planning now for, yeah, the resuming of those payments. And I'm sure like a lot of folks have almost forgotten that they even have a student loan because it's been so long since they've had to make a payment. But yeah, make sure that you account for that repayment reboot in your budget because, yeah, you're going to be in for a rude awakening if you don't. I just want people to start, yeah, making room again for, you know, however big your student loan payment is. If it's $300, if it's $450, just make sure you're not spending all that money. Start saving up again and just get ready for that to resume. Just want to put it on your radar now.
Yeah, yeah. If folks are waiting on Biden to cancel student loans, I wouldn't hold your breath.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this interesting story from Business Insider that we came across that's happening on the other side of the world. And so the headline read, South Koreans are wooing each other with Tesla stock, not flowers, while dating. Okay, so this isn't really like a frugal or cheap. This is sort of like a frugal versus money nerd. So Joel, like, what do you think? Would Emily be down with receiving stock rather than flowers? I know you love getting the discounted tulips at Kroger, right?
Yeah. So. No, I don't. I think I personally like cut flowers too. So I like having them in the house. I like getting them for her because I get to kind of enjoy them as well. And
so
no,
you're a flower guy, not a stock guy.
I think if I gave her like one of those, you know, gift cards to buy some Tesla stocks, she'd be like, oh yeah, cool, thanks. Like, no, she wouldn't be into it.
Yeah, so I can kind of get behind this, right? Because I feel like this is the ultimate gift that keeps on giving. This is something that hopefully will continue to grow. And I love that it's incredibly utilitarian, right? Like, this is so practical as opposed to, you know, flowers, they wilt and they die and you don't get to enjoy them next week unless you dry your flowers out. But they are kind of lacking that romantic side of things, yeah. Right? It feels a little technical, a little bit robotic, but man, I think this is incredibly fascinating. I personally do love the idea of giving a gift as an investment. And so this is something that's happening in South Korea, but man, if this is a cultural movement that starts happening here in the United States, that is something I could totally get behind. Although I would say if you can pair that stock with like some flowers, like a small flower, like it doesn't have to be a massive bouquet or anything fancy, but you know, having something tangible goes a long way.
I can just imagine giving my wife a card that goes along with it that says, I love you so much. I thought so much about you that I made a small investment in your financial future. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, because that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
When you're offering someone or giving someone essentially a little bit of stock. And I think, yeah, stock gift cards are becoming kind of more of a thing in the U.S. too. It's not just a thing that South Korea is into. And Matt, that's largely because of a company called Stockpile. But
right.
We would say that those aren't necessarily the best way to give a financial gift because of the fees associated with them, similar to those, you know, gift cards I was talking about at the beginning of the show.
That's right.
It's the same thing. If you're gifting stock through a company like Stockpile, you're going to pay fees also. So yeah, South Koreans, they're giving the gift of individual stocks, or even more specifically, they're giving a fractional share of an individual stock because
right.
Yeah, you're not giving someone a gift card with like a whole share of Tesla stock on it. That's what, $600?
I mean, a pretty large gift.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, it's a cool trend to see. But I think if we were going to jump on board fully, we'd have to see maybe you know, reduced fees to no fees on these gifts. And also at the same time, maybe a slice of an index fund or a total stock market ETF instead of an individual stock.
Here's a nice little slice of the S&P, baby, just for you. Yeah,
exactly.
That's okay. So that's totally
that's romantic right there.
Yeah, exactly. That's something I could get behind. And also too, I think one of the reasons I might be more on board with this, come in, let's be honest, I'm half Korean, and so maybe there's something in my DNA that makes me more likely to want to do something like that rather than, you know, someone like you who's got that Norwegian blood.
Matt, let's talk about what's next after the break. No ludicrous headline of the week this week because we wanted to bring on friend of the show, John Acuff, who has written a new book about the solution to overthinking. And there's a lot of things that he wrote about in that book that can actually really help us too make better decisions with our money. We'll bring him on right after this break.
All right, like like we mentioned, we are joined now by New York Times bestselling author, motivational speaker, and kind of like professional funny guy as well, John Acuff. And a couple months ago, he published his book, Soundtracks, The Surprising Solution to Overthinking. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Overthinking, I do this a lot myself. Kate always, she'll look over at me, and if she sees me there with kind of like a frown on my face, she's like, are you stuck? that's the term that we use. But John, we are we're glad to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, John, glad to have you in. And before we dive into the problem of overthinking, you this is a money show. You had a funny story in your book about paying for 48 haircuts in advance.
That was a fantastic money decision. Thanks for bringing that up right out of the gate.
I mean, it sounds like something I would do. So, you know, maybe we're like brothers from another mother or something like that. But is that your tendency? Do you have a tendency to like buy in bulk to try to save money?
Well, she did a sales technique on me and I knew it. Like I could feel it in the moment. And she said, I buy haircuts in packages. It's like, oh, you buy six, you save X amount of dollars. And so I was just curious and I needed to buy more. And I was like, what's your biggest package? And she was like, 48 haircuts. And I was like, and she goes, your friend Chris just bought it. And I was like, ooh, if it was good enough for Chris, like I might as well have jumped off the turnip truck or whatever. And so I was like, I'll take it. And I got home and my wife was like, you did what? And I was like, yeah, you saved so much money. And she said, well, let's see, you get your hair cut once every 3 weeks or so. So 48 times three is 144 weeks divided by 52. It's going to take you 2.7 years to finish those haircuts. And I was like, but think of the savings. And so, yeah, it was, I have 24 left. So every time I go, she says, you only have 25 left. And then COVID hit. And I was like, I think I'm going to lose 46 haircuts. Like I bought it like 2 weeks before COVID. And I was like, that was a bad investment in my head. But yeah, I make some questionable money decisions. That's a fair point.
That's fine. Yeah, your wife's like, fingers crossed, your barber's still around.
could retire before I finish my haircuts. And like, the savings weren't that dramatic. I was just like, ooh, she was basically like, did you drop $1,000 on haircuts in the future? And I was like, when you say it that way, it doesn't sound smart. But yes, that's what I did.
Sometimes you gotta buy bulk. John, let's talk about overthinking, right? We wanted to know, is it actually all that bad, right? Like sometimes I wonder if folks actually should be spending more time thinking about what they're doing with their lives and what they're doing with their money.
Yeah, so here's the difference between overthinking and, say, being prepared. Because a lot of people say, well, I just like to be detailed, I'm organized, you know, I'm analytical. That's great. Be all those things. The difference between being prepared and overthinking is being prepared always leads to an action. And overthinking always leads to more overthinking. So if you showed me, okay, I launched my podcast, I invested in the thing, I paid off the debt, awesome. You're prepared, you had great information, you made a decision. There's a trail of actions behind being prepared. There's just a trail of more overthinking behind overthinking. So there's the big difference.
And so in your book, John, you detail your problem with overthinking. And so how is overthinking hurting your life, your ability to grow? Like what was it doing to you?
Well, so I define overthinking as when what you think gets in the way of what you want. And for me, it was adding a bunch of extra thoughts that weren't helpful. I call them soundtracks. So it's just a repetitive thought. Some people say a thought is like a leaf on a river or a car on the highway. For me, it's a soundtrack because a soundtrack can change an entire movie. If you see an idyllic scene where kids frolicking, there's a quiet house with a white picket fence, but then they play ominous music, suddenly you go, there's definitely a creepy clown in the sewer. Something is, but if they play a Vanessa Carlton song, somebody is about to make their way downtown. It's a rom-com. And so the soundtracks we listen to have the impact to change everything that's going on. And most of the times we don't even know they're playing. And there's so many soundtracks around money. There's so many, you know, soundtracks that get in the way of people making decisions. And so for me, that was curious to go, okay, what am I listening to right now? And is it helping create the life I want? Because the reality is your ideas, your thoughts lead to your actions, which lead to your results. So if you want better results, you should start with better thoughts.
Yeah, that analogy of thoughts ruminating in our brain as being the soundtrack to our lives makes a whole lot of sense.
Well, here's the thing, like here's the one of the craziest studies. So the NYU brought two groups of college students in. They said, hey, we want you to make some sentences out of these words. They gave them a word bank. Here's a bunch of words, make some sentences. First group, normal words. Second group, they had hidden words related to being elderly. So words like retired, bald, Florida. And then they made some sentences, and then they said, the second part of the test is down the hall. Please walk down there. And they secretly timed them as they walked. And the people who had been exposed to the words about old age physically walked slower. Just reading words about being old made them act old. So you think about the number of broken soundtracks people are carrying into life about money. I mean, they're, you know, their parents set a limit and said money is bad, or having money is bad, or rich people got money illegally. That's how they got, like, anybody successful is evil. Like, there's all these broken soundtracks related to money that get in the way of people actually doing something good.
Yeah. Well, so as you talked with folks, as you interviewed folks for your book, you know, did you come across some examples of broken soundtracks as they specifically pertain to money? You know, I'm thinking through, like, we can have a lot of broken ideas when it comes to how it is that we earn money, how we spend our money. I would love to hear some thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, one that was really interesting was somebody said, you know, if I buy a $75,000 BMW, my family will say, that's such a waste of money. Like, how, you know, like, oh, I guess you're fancy. And they'll kind of knock them down. He said, if I buy a $75,000 Suburban, they'll say, that's a great family car. Good for you. Like, way to take care of your family. And so the perception of the brand is creating the reality. So there's all these soundtracks related to, I can only earn a certain amount of money. I can't out earn my parents. Must be nice. That's another broken soundtrack. Mm. When you achieve something with your money and you tell a friend or tell a family member and they go, well, that must be nice. Must be nice to be you. And it's this really belittling statement. And so, yeah, I saw a lot of people, you know, during the research, because the research was done by a PhD named Mike Peasley, and we commissioned a huge study, and we asked 10,000 people if they struggle with overthinking, and 99.5% of people said yes. Wow. And so everybody's doing it, especially around sensitive topics like money. And so I saw a lot of people that would have fear of success because the success wasn't a good thing. And so they'd self-sabotage the closer they got to financial success because they felt ashamed of the success because they were listening to a broken soundtrack.
I want to meet some of those 0.5% of people. Who are those people?
Yeah, I think most of them are liars. They're terrible people. You don't want to, I mean.
Or they're
the
like
funny
monks
thing
or something.
Was,
I don't know.
Or robots.
We would get emails from people that would say, I couldn't finish the survey because I was overthinking it. And I'd say, that's probably a sign you're an overthinker if a 5-question survey is the thing that you're like, you know what? I need to analyze this a little deeper.
Right.
But yeah, money is so full of broken soundtracks. And here's the thing. So if your audience is like, okay, well, how do I know if I have a broken soundtrack? Well, here's the easiest, simplest way to find out. Write down something you want to do. Okay, I want to retire early. I want to invest. I want to own my own house. I want to ask that person out. I want to write a book. I want to do a podcast. I want to lose 10 pounds, whatever it is. Write it down and listen to the first thoughts that come next. Like, listen to your reaction. Every reaction is an education. And when you hear that, there's a chance there's going to be some broken soundtracks there. Who am I to write a book? Who am I to start a podcast? Don't be greedy. Like, you shouldn't desire that car, that house, that whatever. And then you take that broken soundtrack and you ask it 3 really simple questions. Here's what you ask it. You say, number 1, is it true? Is the thing I'm telling myself true? Number 2, is it helpful? When I listen to it, does it push me forward or hold me back? And number 3, is it kind? If I said it to a friend, would they still want to be my friend? And if you can't say yes to those 3 questions, it's probably a broken soundtrack that you should retire.
Yeah, I thought that was super helpful, especially like if you wouldn't say it to a friend, don't say it to yourself. That's such helpful advice. John, I saw this article in the Wall Street Journal the other day about millennials and facing imposter syndrome. I feel like imposter syndrome is something we're talking about a whole lot more these days. And it's basically where, like, you know, we don't feel like we're good enough. And we, you know, why would anybody listen to me? Or why am I deserving of this? I think, like, Matt and I, if we're honest, we felt that too, creating a podcast. Like, why should people listen to us? Like, anybody putting something out there into the world feels at least a little bit of that. So like, when it comes to our finances, imposter syndrome and a lack of belief in ourselves can keep us from making progress financially. So, like, yeah, what other, do you have other tools or techniques that you talk about in the book that you recommend to help us, like, move forward and, you know, create a new soundtrack that's, like, not holding us back?
Yeah, so the 3 steps are you retire the broken one, you replace it with a new one, and you repeat the new one so often it becomes as automatic as the old one. And so it's simple. It's you retire, you replace, you repeat. So with something like that, with imposter syndrome, let's just take that because I think it's rampant. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, okay, well, how do I get over imposter syndrome? And I said, I think the broken soundtrack is the word over, because over is a word of perfectionism. Over is the idea I climbed over a wall and I'm all done with it. I'm over imposter syndrome. I think the better word, the new soundtrack, is I go through imposter syndrome. I go through it. Like, I still deal with it. I've written 7 books. Some of them are New York Times bestsellers. There's still days where I feel like I'm not a real writer. There's still days where I feel like I'm an imposter. I go through it. It's the same way when somebody goes, you can be fearless. I don't think that's true for a second. I think at every new level, when you do something new, there's a new level of fear. The first time I talked to 100 people at a company, I had 100 person size fear, but I worked on it. I did repetitions. I got over, you know, I got through it. I beat it. But then I spoke to 1,000 people and there's 1,000 person fear. And then I worked on that. I spoke to 10,000 people. And at every new thing, there was a level of fear. So another soundtrack is fear gets a voice, not a vote. It gets a voice. It's going to have a voice. It's going to be there. You don't feel ashamed that it's there, but it doesn't get a vote. It doesn't get to say, sit at the table and go, you don't get to do that thing. You don't get to start the podcast, save money, whatever the thing is. So I think it's really about, instead of trying to get over imposter syndrome, it's I'm going to go through it. And I acknowledge that and I figure that out.
Yeah. So the last thing that you mentioned, the repeating, how long does someone need to repeat it, right? Because I'm guessing this isn't something that our listeners can fix overnight, you know? Like, so when we've held these negative thoughts in our minds for so long, when those broken soundtracks have played, you know, in our minds since we were kids, most likely, it's got to be hard to change. And so how long will it take, or what does real progress look like, do you think?
Yeah, so it's, you know, I wish I could say it's 37 times and then you're done. In the same way that if somebody said, how long does it take to write a book, or how long does it... But the reality is there's some soundtracks that can change in an instant. And we've all had that experience. We've all worked with a coworker who was really difficult. And we were like, I can't stand that guy. And then you find out his wife has cancer and it changes everything. Suddenly, every time he's short in a meeting, you go, oh, she must have had a really bad chemo session. Like, that's not about this meeting. And that little sentence, knowing that, changes your whole perception. So that can happen. There's other times, though, when you've carried around something and you get this brand new soundtrack and you send it up against this one that's been kicking around for 10 years doing push-ups in the prison yard, and you go, good luck, little fella.
That
like,
soundtrack is jacked.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he is so yoked, and you're like, good luck. And so you have to repeat it multiple times, and you have to say, okay, I'm going to give it a chance. It's kind of like when somebody says, okay, you know what? I'm in debt, and this plan that I'm doing isn't working. It's just not working to get out of debt. And you go, well, how long have you done it? And they say, 10 days. And you go, how long did it take you to get into debt? And they go, 10 years. So you gave the problem 10 years to develop and the solution 10 days? That's so unkind to the solution. So there are going to be times where you go, I'm going to repeat this. Like, I'm going to repeat this until I believe it. I'm going to repeat this until I see examples of it. I'm going to find creative ways to repeat this so that I can be deliberate about actually believing this and replacing it. So it can certainly take time, but it's worth it. And you'll see progress in really fun ways where there'll be a situation where you used to always react a certain way and you won't react that way. And you'll go, what just happened? And it's because your brain picked the most recent soundtrack you've been listening to. It's like grabbed it from the top of the pile and it was a positive one. It was a new one. It was a fresh one. And you'll go, wait a second, that's not how I usually react. I'm starting to reprogram how I think about how I think.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I love, too, what you said. Fear gets a voice, not a vote. And I think especially when it comes to a lot of, like, the money issues that pop up in our lives, fear is a reaction that we have. And it's not that fear is completely unfounded, but it doesn't have the final say, that's for sure. And John, there's so much good info in your new book, Soundtracks. We really appreciate you joining us. Where can our listeners find out more about the new book, your podcast, and everything else you got going on?
Yeah, so I would say if you want to hear an episode of my podcast, it's called All It Takes Is a Goal. I interviewed a woman named Colleen Berry, who lost her job in Boston. She was a documentary filmmaker, had to take 3 jobs making pizza. She was a receptionist, and she decided, I'm going to change my mindset, and I'm going to change working in this little office as a receptionist into the best customer service I can ever do. And she changed her mindset, and she's now the CEO of the company.
Wow.
And so, like, if you want a, okay, I feel stuck story and somebody got out from being stuck, she's amazing. So the podcast is All It Takes Is a Goal. And then the book is available everywhere. Books are sold. But if you want to check out the first chapter, if you're like, you sounded okay, but anybody can sound okay for like 15 minutes, like, let's see what the book's really about. Just go read the free chapter at soundtracksbook.com, and then John Acuff on every social media platform.
Love it. John, thanks so much for joining us today. You're the best. And we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Matt. Glad we got to catch up with John Acuff for a second. Not a personal finance expert, but he is an expert when it comes to like some of these behavioral management things.
Yeah, the way we think, dude.
Yeah, stopping overthinking. And that can present a huge roadblock when it comes to us actually being able to make progress in, you know, those financial goals that we have. So glad to catch up with him for a minute. And yeah, we'll link to all his stuff in our show notes because, yeah, the book's great. The podcast is excellent as well.
That's right. So that's going to be it for this Friday Flight episode. We'll see you back here on Monday. We've got a great full interview lined up for y'all with the couple behind the 2 cents videos up on YouTube.
Really, yeah, those PBS videos, they get millions of views.
Dude, they're so good. I love those. So you can look forward to that. We hope you all have a great weekend. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.